From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. For several folks in the audience today, you're here in a very real way because this is our weekly listener mail. Behind the scenes, every week, sometimes over the weekend, Matt, Noel, and I take a survey of all the amazing, sometimes frightening, correspondence we have received from you, either through our phone number 1-833-STDWYTK, through our email conspiracy@iHeartRadio, or through the various other ways that you can reach out to us as a show or as individuals. We mix this with great care. We stir it in a cauldron of concepts. We add a little bit of perspective. We take some tangents and throw them in the mix for a little bit of chef kiss umami. And that's what we end up bringing you every week. And that's what we're bringing you today. Our listener mail is going to... We're going to have some surprises for you. There's one, in fact, that there may be an imposter in the capital of the United States. Matt was a little irked behind the scenes when we asked him to tell us what this listener mail would be about. I think, Matt, eventually you just went, fine, hypnosis. But
yeah.
and then we have another a thread from our Facebook page. Here's where it gets crazy. They don't want to spoil just yet. Noel, I think I saw the same email that caught your eye, but you dug a little deeper on this one, right?
Yeah, just a little bit. It's really just kind of a fun, silly story, and also about, like, gosh, in the age, the very relatively recent age of it seemingly not being that hard to, like, infiltrate the White House, or rather, you know, government buildings, let us say, on Capitol Hill. Maybe the White House is a little trickier, but there's a story. Luckily, it's not anybody with nefarious intent, but we heard from a listener who I will call Steve, who wrote thusly, "Hello, gentlemen and lady. I'm wondering if you'd heard about the story of someone online contacting various legitimate news agencies, including The Plain Dealer, CQ Roll Call, and The Washington Blade." Sorry, I said Blade really weird, but I'm going to go with it. And ask for, you know, press credentials, essentially, to ask questions of President Biden's press secretary named Jen Psaki. Guessing the P is silent. I have not heard this name spoken yet. The person in question, Steve writes, has the name Casey Lego Montague. And she supposedly represented the new group White House News, even though there is no such group. And the questions, on the other hand, were legitimate, such as things like COVID-19 travel bans, ambassadorships, any reactions to the Microsoft hack, and President Biden's current relationship with President Barack Obama. The report does not go into detail on the answers. This person may have been shifty in their way of asking questions, but they do seem like questions people would like to hear the answers to. I see this as nothing more than getting a shout out at the end of a podcast, and the person who did this, getting a fist bump from Steve. To Casey Lego Montague, I tip my hat. Thank you, gentlemen and lady, for making a great podcast that I look forward to every weekday. Steve from Ohio. Steve from Ohio. Yeah, and this is totally true. And apparently that Lego was not for nothing, that middle name there. This person, Casey Montague, is an online like Lego gamer. And a lot of this does stem back to COVID protocols, because according to this Politico article, four times in the recent weeks, members of the White House press corps have asked questions on behalf of colleagues who could not be there or claiming their colleagues were unable to be there due to COVID restrictions and protocols. And it's a particular colleague, and that colleague goes by the name Casey Montague and does not exist. And is in fact, you know, well, at least the very least, is not a reporter. So yeah, this identity has been kind of popping up here and there in the White House for a while now. And that's all correct. What Steve said, the outlet is White House News, which is not a real thing, and refers to it as WHN. And yeah, this individual has two actual Twitter handles, which are followed by a lot of top White House actual staffers and journalists, and also has filed Freedom of Information Act requests to obtain Psaki's personal financial disclosure forms, along with disclosure forms tied to at least one other official that Politico found out about, and that is the president's national security advisor, Jake Sullivan. Yeah, Montague is so, I guess, just kind of a phantom at this point, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool just being able to sneak in there, get some questions off over time, get out. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But also terrifying that security is that lax or duped that easily. One point of contention, though, I believe this person was a Roblox player.
That's right. It says the Politico piece goes on to report that they believe that Montague, their activities were nothing short of a weird flex for their online gaming platform of choice, which is Roblox. And
which is not Lego, sir.
That's right, Matt. But I don't know if you know this. Clearly, you're not a Roblox enthusiast. Apparently, Roblox players jokingly refer to themselves as Legos.
Well, yeah, because they know they're not, and it's a joke.
Exactly. Just saying. I'm just saying it's a nod, you know, it's like PogChamps and Twitch community or whatever, you know, it's like this jargon these kids have. I'm confused, though. Did this person actually show up in person? Because the Politico article says four times in recent weeks, members of the White House press corps have relayed questions to Press Secretary Jen Psaki from someone claiming to be a reporter who is not able to be there in the room due to COVID protocols.
I don't believe they have met these reporters in person.
That's right.
Because you'll see it's all phrased or couched as in communication with colleagues or confidants. This is an industry. And because of the size of it, right, like imagine you work for presidential administration and your job's to keep an eye on the news and analyze it, synthesize it, evaluate, digest it, et cetera, then you're just going to start scooping up anything that feels like it considers itself a legitimate news source, even if you don't. I mean, make no mistake, there's someone in the White House keeping an eye on InfoWars. They're not keeping as close an eye on it as they would, say, the editorial board of the New York Times, but they're definitely trying to get as much information about reporters and about reporting outlets as they can. This, I think I can say this now, I mentioned it a little bit off air. The statute of limitations has passed for whatever number of crimes I committed in doing this, but I impersonated a reporter and got to interview a former political candidate, former presidential candidate Howard Dean a number of years ago. And their security was cartoonishly lax. Maybe I just looked like I might be a legit reporter from the local newspaper that I totally made up. But literally what I did, guys, I had one of those little notebooks I always carry. And I was wearing a baseball cap, or I had one in my car. You know, you always have like a couple of changes of clothes in your car and stuff. So I had a baseball cap.
Everybody has that. Yep.
Well, everybody should. So
is that in your go bag, or is that like a separate thing?
Yeah, no, it's a modular. Okay, I don't want to get us in the weeds, but so I had this hat, and I don't know where this baseball cap came from. I still have it. It's a Steelers cap, and so I turned it backwards, and I was like, boom. This is my Clark Kent to Superman move. I'm a reporter now. And I asked Howard Dean if I could ask him some questions. And I didn't immediately like Zach Galifianakis, Eric Andre this, because I didn't think I would get that far. So like partway through, this conversation was maybe 20 minutes, which was a lot of time for the guy who's running for president. But I think eventually his handlers realized that I had no idea what I was doing. I was just making this up. But wait, long story short, you know, there were no consequences for me. He said, okay, you just have to move on. I didn't have a press pass. Everybody else had a press pass. No one checked me for that. I walked in and out of this restricted area by just looking very busy on my notepad. The social engineering is real. And this makes me wonder, Noel, did Montague expect to get this far? Because I certainly didn't.
I would think no. This sounds like the kind of prank. I wonder if Montague's a child.
Quite possibly.
I got it. Because kids, my kid, like, she's up on all this stuff, all this kind of questions. And honestly, I bet a kid reporter sometimes probably asks better questions than some of these adult reporters. But that's just me and my hot take. That's not a diss on journalists. I think journalists are great, but I think, you know, obviously there's certain agendas and all that stuff. But I think it's a fabulous story, and we don't know who Montague is other than that they're a fan of Roblox. And I will tell you, Roblox is played predominantly by tweens and teens. You know, it's not really know a lot of like grown adults playing Roblox.
Well, there's a.
That's not true. Maybe that's
I'm just was going to say that's one of the dangers of having a massive online game where there are a lot of tweens and teens also playing with people who may be adults, and you never know. Oh, that's creepy. I don't want to think about that anymore. Okay. Let's stop.
Okay, that is true. Not something to take lightly for sure. There's all these Twitter accounts. This is part of the kind of the breadcrumbs that this person has left. One of them, it says Casey Lego Montague, has been doing a little back and forth with some other Twitter users, but there's no picture, you know, to identify anything about this person. The only thing that's there right now is in a nod to a previous Strange News episode we did. The background is of the late Prince Philip, and the avatar used is Trisha Paytas, who's like a big YouTube person. So again, Roblox and follower of YouTube influencer types. Not even an influence. Let's see what this Trisha Paytas is all about. I'm willing to bet that if I haven't heard of her, it's the kind of person like that my kid would be into. And all these like Twitch streamers and stuff. It's totally under my radar. Let's see. Oh, okay. She looks like kind of like a train wreck Real Housewives type person. So anyway, the jury's still out, but I think we could take a quick pause after that one, guys. What do you think?
Yeah. Ben, was your run in before or after the incident? You know?
Yeah, it was before. Okay. That's my only regret.
All right. Just had to ask.
All right. Well, we hatch up some more weird trolling the government schemes of our own. We're going to take a quick break and then be right back with more listener mail. Okay, we're back. And really quickly, I just want to say the YouTuber that I was talking about before the break, Trisha Paytas, now uses they, them pronouns. Just wanted to be respectful of that. This is literally a day old story. So I didn't want to misgender anybody. So sorry, Ben.
Yeah, right on. We have returned. We're going into a story I wanted to share with everyone, a discussion we talked about off air. This is a little bit different. I want to try something new with you, fellow conspiracy realists. I want to bring many of you along in this segment. We talk about our Facebook group. Here's where it gets crazy. And we've been doing an okay job keeping up with the phone banks, but I wanted to give our Facebook page a little bit of TLC because I read something very interesting from Casper W. And let me give you Casper's post, and then we can start talking about some of the troubling implications of what Casper is asking here. Casper says, "Hi, first-time poster, long-time listener. I have a 5-year-old son, and we're learning how to spell words, and I suggested we play Hangman until he asked what it was. That's when I realized I never knew how dark of a game it is until I was explaining this thing to my kids. I said, you have to guess the correct letters of a word or a phrase before a man gets hanged. So we literally played a game that depicted a man being lynched in grade school, and no one batted an eye. I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. So I guess, says Casper, my question for our esteemed podcast host and community is, what is the dark side of other games we all played in our youth that wouldn't or shouldn't be allowed today? Thank you, Casper. There are fantastic responses. We can share some of these from your fellow conspiracy realists. But before we do, Noel, Matt, Doc, have you all ever thought of this? I was surprised that I had never thought of the game in that way.
I haven't really thought of that game much at all in a long time, since I was a kid, probably.
Yeah, it's a weird concept of explaining regular things that are in our lives that we just haven't thought about since we were kids. They just exist. But then explaining that to a young person and the way Casper did. I'm going to think about this while we're continuing to talk, if there's anything else that comes to mind. But right now,
same.
I can't think of anything. My dogs are doing something.
Playing Hangman?
I think maybe it's a very vicious game of Hangman.
Right. They're trying to spell wolf.
Now, there was definitely some point when I was an adult when I randomly thought about that. And I'm like, huh, that's kind of up, but like, I don't remember what the context was. Same thing with other things that, like, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, this is cool, like Pepe Le Pew and his antics, that like when you're an adult, you're like, it's kind of weird. Not a game, but just a thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly where this conversation is going. Doc Holliday, mind reader. I feel like this brings up two concepts, and gaming is one of those concepts, but it's a smaller part of the larger thing, which is just how sinister so many seemingly innocent, you know, cartoons, games, songs, rituals of childhood appear when you look back on them as an adult. I was in conversations with our friend, I believe it was the Bakeologist, who had supplied us those awesome cookies last year.
I still have two in my cabinet, by the way.
Nice.
I had to eat one of mine, but I do have the other one as a keepsake.
So thank you again, Fakeologist. But I believe it was you who, it may have been you, it may have been someone else who noted that there's a weird approach to games that we take in the Western world. A game seems to necessitate a winner and a loser in an often cutthroat competition. But when you think about it, that's not really how games have to be. And when we look at some of the world's most popular games, or some of the games we all remember as kids, we see some crazy stuff. I'd like to shout out Sean M., who responded to Casper's post by saying, chess. Sacrifice whatever it takes to complete a targeted killing, so long as your aristocracy survives.
Wow.
That's chess?
Dude. I guess it's definitely one way of looking at it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just save the king, whatever you do, no matter what the collateral damage.
Right, and some of those pieces are literally meant to die. That's why they're on the board. But there's another one, Samantha H., brought up something I was not aware of concerning the history of cakewalks. We all know what a cakewalk is. So according to Samantha, I haven't done too much research on this. She says, my elementary school used to do cakewalks to raise money for various things. And I just learned recently that it actually comes from the era of slavery, making enslaved people dance to earn a cake for the amusement of slave owners.
Really?
Says, this is so awful. So many lighthearted activities have such dark, lots of racist roots. I had never heard this before either.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Holy cow. Yeah, this is one of those Googles that will take you down a nasty rabbit hole. Literally just type in history of cakewalk. And it's terrible. It's like slaves dressed up in, you know, finery, basically, but clearly as some sort of like macabre kind of like, you know, show, parading around, you know, with this like giant cake in the middle. There's so many images. If you type, it's all, oh my God, it's very disturbing, but very fascinating. And so many historical images tied to this. I had no idea.
Yeah, this reminds me of our previous work on the darker side of things that are generally considered good, like the Sierra Club. Also, there's one I was aware of. Miranda Giselle A. talks about Ring Around the Rosie. And you guys have probably heard the issue with Ring Around the Rosie.
Because it's about killing, like dying?
It's about getting some sort of like plague, right? Is it about some sort of form of plague?
Yeah, the 1665 Great Plague of London. That is what that children's nursery rhyme is about. And you can see, you know, so many nursery rhymes, especially those that are European in origin, harken back to really weird historical events. Like Baba Black Sheep is about the medieval wool tax.
Okay.
But
okay. What about Duck Duck Goose? Is Duck Duck Goose okay, you guys? Come on, don't ruin this. Don't take this from me, please.
I highly doubt it.
I mean, if there's any pattern here, I don't know. I'm afraid to search for it on Brave, even though Brave is pretty decent.
It's powered by Tor, baby. You can do it.
There we go. That's the tagline.
No. It's fine. Duck Duck Goose originated in Scandinavia, and it was a game to teach children how to be patient and creative and clever.
Oh, good.
We can have that one.
For Duck Duck Goose. So there's also this idea that balloon animals, this comes from Grant S., the practice of making balloon animals may have some roots in Aztec rituals. This one is unconfirmed, to be clear, but Grant and some folks are trying to figure out whether it's true that ancient Aztecs would take intestines of animals or people and make decorative shapes out of them. But far be it for us to judge the Aztecs without having solid proof of this. We do know, or at least I like to think, that most Americans today are very well aware just how many childhood songs or chants were originally quite racist in origin, and then had certain racial epithets changed to animals,
like "Eeny Meeny Miny Moe."
Yes, exactly, like that one. These phrases were much more common not too long ago, which is why the famous mystery novel by Agatha Christie is known as 10 Little Indians today. That is not the original title. And it's strange, right?
Super strange. And I mean, there's phrases that, thankfully, I mean, with all our best intentions and just in general, I think we're all dudes that never ever intend to say anything or accidentally even, you know, step in any territory that people would find offensive or in any way, you know, dismissive in any, whether racially or by gender or whatever. But there are little things that we get stuck in our vernacular that we have only just recently realized are somewhat problematic. And you have to like kind of train yourself not to say those things anymore. I do still think context is king and it's all in the usage of things. But I mean, certain things, words and phrases and, you know, games even, I think probably should be canceled. But
it really is a situation where you just got to educate yourself. Oh, I can't stop doing it, Ben. I'm sorry.
How dare you? How dare you, Matt? You know, for everybody listening, there was a time a while ago when Matt and I were friends. Like, we would hang out.
Oh, the glory days.
We would talk about non-work stuff, but that I get it. I pick it up what you're putting down, Matt. It's over. all right. So we have more examples out there. I do recommend checking out Here's Where It Gets Crazy and seeing this post, because you can maybe share some of your own experiences, or you can send your stories directly to us. We encourage you to do so. I personally love hearing about this because it's a form of hidden history. And history is really, as I've said before, history is not static. It is an ongoing conversation. History is a palimpsest. That's the best visual metaphor. These things that happen may be written over, but they never really disappear. And you can learn so much about the present day by learning the origins of the things that we take for granted. With that being said, I know that's a little heavy and pretentious and philosophical, whatever. But with that being said, I thought it would be appropriate to end on one of my favorite lines from this thread. I will give this completely arbitrary award for favorite comment to you, Eric A., who, when asked about Sinister Games, responded by saying, "Twister is just sex in a box." That's my time, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor. Tip your server. We'll be back with one more piece of listener mail.
Left hand blue. Oh, yeah. Okay, we're back, everybody. It's a Twister callback, so don't be disturbed, everyone.
Yeah, say it in a sexy
sex
voice.
In a box.
Left hand blue. Tonight on the quiet storm, let's go for a spin.
You know what? Speaking of, let's go to, this is a mini, this is a mini voicemail. We're not going to even really address this one, but we're going to play it right now. You ready for it?
Hit me.
Hi, this is Roneal, and I'm calling from my landline from my cabin in the middle of the forest. And I just wanted to let you know that you both have the sexiest voices, and I just love listening to you talk about conspiracy theories with your sexy voices, especially when the deeper voiced guy goes, mm-hmm, in his deep voice. Love it.
Oh, no. Come on, man. All right.
Come on. It's perfect. It's okay, perfect.
All right. All right.
You know that's Ben, right?
No, that's me.
Oh, is that you?
Well, that's not true. We both say, mm-hmm. I can't tell. I definitely do say it, though. And Ben does, too. And what do you mean the both of us? There's three of us. Which one is she talking about?
I couldn't help but think about it when... when Ben went left hand blue.
I think I, well, first off, thanks so much. Thanks for, so much for checking out the show and giving us a call. I am tempted to think that last person is supposed to be me because some of our other fellow listeners turned my habit of saying mm-hmm into a drinking game. So I hope that everyone is.
I do it too, Ben.
Feeling better. I hope no one got alcohol poisoning.
You don't get to own Ben. You don't get to own it.
I don't own it. I don't own it. I'm just the person when I from the YouTube days, and in our earlier, you were our producer on those. The same forever. It's just my way That's of fair. Showing our colleagues and people in conversation that I am listening to them. As active listening, I think that's a good thing to do.
No, yeah, I agree, Ben. I agree. I'm teasing, but I'm just saying it's funny because I do find myself also saying mm-hmm a lot, and I also have a low voice.
All right, guys. All right,
the jury is out.
So that was a playing aside. Let's go to our actual voicemail.
What? That wasn't it?
No.
It is, by the way. I'm pretty sure it's 100% me, just because of that drinking game. But you know what? We all have, well, we all actually have really weirdly distinctive voices. Have you guys noticed that?
She didn't say anything about the guy that cackles all the time and yells at his dog. So I'm feeling I'm feeling good.
Sounds like you all need to have an mm-hmm off.
Oh, no, please don't.
Have a contest.
Howard Stern. Never mind. Okay.
She was talking about Paul Mission Control Deckant.
That's what right. It was.
Yeah.
But
his
hey,
silence is deafening.
But hey, we got a different voicemail we're going to play now. This voicemail, I'm going to lead it with this. This person says, as a quote, "It worked. I don't know how it worked, but it worked." Okay, let's listen.
Hi, my name is Nora. I was just listening to your episode on hypnosis on the Texas Rangers, hypnotizing people and laughing because I'm from Texas and... Anyway, I just think it's weird. I just wanted to maybe share my story. When I was a kid, I was hypnotized to alleviate a medical condition that didn't respond to any traditional treatments. And it's a long story, and I think it's really interesting. I've never known anybody else. I know that it's done, but I don't know anybody else or haven't met anybody else who's actually been through that. And you guys can give me a call if you want to hear my story to talk about that side of hypnosis and how the mind works. And it's really, really cool. So anyway, I hope I'm listening, you guys. I love your show. Thanks. Your podcast.
Oh, yeah, the podcast.
Awesome. Keep that part in. That's great. You know, Matt, when we were getting geared up to record the show today, you actually had us speak to Nora directly.
Yes, I was on the phone with Nora. I was trying to talk to her right before we started recording because she mentions, you know, it's a long story, right? And my brain was going, "Oh, I need to learn more about this." So we ended up talking for quite a while. Sorry you missed it, Noel. We were. I was talking to her separately and then just happened to jump on the Zoom while I was finishing that conversation.
Got it.
But let's talk a little bit more about this. Before we jump in, have you guys ever heard of hypnotherapy being used to cure a physical condition, like something something that a dermatologist would deal with?
Okay. No. Yeah, I have. I think the most common form of hypnotherapy for a physical condition would be something that is both physical and psychological, such as addiction, right? To tobacco, addiction to alcohol or other drugs of that ilk. But this sounds like you're talking about a skin condition, possibly eczema, something like that, maybe?
Yeah, a skin condition. My brain goes to exactly where yours just went, thinking about addiction, hypnotherapy for that kind of thing, using that technique to convince someone that they don't need a substance or, you know, to think about something else when that addictive thing begins to occur. In Nora's case.
Oh, I just want to point out, I'm also drinking a carafe of coffee as well.
Oh, sure. Monster Paradise, Ultra Paradise, delicious. Monster Energy, all the stuff you want and don't want at the same time. And it's great and terrible, but wonderful. Okay, so Nora was 5 or 6 years old and she was dealing with warts on her hands. She said there was significant wart growth on her hands. And she had been to several doctors in a small town, and the doctors, you know, they would do the painful treatments that many of us, probably you, have experienced before with some kind of growth. I used to get them under my armpits and back of my neck. They would literally use a scalpel or scissors to cut off a wart. And it would bleed like crazy. And it was really gross. Or they would freeze. They would freeze them. A lot of times I had a couple on my hands that were frozen off when I was younger. She said that she went to several doctors, physicians that did these treatments on her, and the warts would grow back and more warts would grow. And it was just a terrible situation. They were on, I think, their third or fourth doctor visit. Like this is, again, Nora as a 5 or 6 year old with her mom. And they were just asking another physician, "What can you do for this besides these things that don't work?" And it was a father and son general practitioner office, at least according to Nora's recollection and conversations with her mother. The son was talking to them when the father was like listening, I guess, around the corner. And he kind of peeked his head in and was like, "Hey, I got a little something different that we could try. Mom, you down?" And Nora's mom said, "Okay, let's try it." They went into his office and he sat Nora down, this very young child. The mom was there with her in the room, and the doctor said quietly and calmly, "I want you to interlace your fingers. So put your fingers together." Okay. Yeah, we're doing this. And then he said, "I want you to stretch your arms out as high as they can go." So she stretched her arms as high as she could stretch them.
Oh, and they kind of like ballerina style.
Ballerina style. And then he asked her to separate her fingers, and she could not. And she remembers distinctly not being able to separate her fingers. And then slowly and methodically, he transitioned to, "Okay, now I want you to separate your fingers." And she separated her fingers. And I guess he put her into a hypnotic state pretty quickly, at least to her recollection. And after that, Nora went to multiple other sessions with this doctor and her mother. And over the course of not a long time, her warts completely went away, according to both her and her mother.
Hmm.
And my, you know, my thoughts are, how? Right? How is this possible? This can't be a thing. There's no way in the world that this could possibly be a thing. Hypnosis being used to suggest to a person or to a person's dermis or epidermis to change the way it's functioning. I was hugely, hugely skeptical, and I still am to a large extent. But Nora is absolutely convinced that this is what cured her warts.
I see. Okay. The thing is, we know that there is we know that there are studies on hypnotherapy as a treatment for warts, which I just learned, by the way, are called Verruca vulgaris, which sounds like
a
background singer in GWAR.
Well, it's also what the character in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is named after. Verruca salt was I don't know, maybe it was just a combination of two words, but a verruca is like a pustule or a boil or a wart.
It does seem strange because the science it seems to be confirmed in some places, but then people have problems with some of the studies earlier. I think the biggest takeaway for anybody who's not a hypnotherapist or a doctor is that modern science is still struggling to understand the relationship between the mind and the body. And we know that these two categories, these two things, can influence each other in a reciprocal way. Like your gut biome can have an effect on your mind, on your mental function. That sounds really weird, but it is also really true. So to me, it's not out of the realm of possibility that self-hypnosis or professional hypnotherapy could mitigate some physical conditions, especially if they're caused by something someone is mentally experiencing, like anxiety or stress, you know, when people, like, their hives might flare up, right? Because they're very stressed. You remove the stress, the hives dissipate.
I could totally see that. I guess I just didn't see the correlation between, I guess, the warts and something mentally that was going on, something psychologically going on. Because I would be skeptical that your mind could influence your gut bacteria.
I don't know about that specifically, but some things like shingles, for example, are caused by stress often.
Mm-hmm.
And that is literally, I mean, it's not the same as a wart, but it's a breakout of unusual, you know, kind of bumps, and it can manifest differently. But every time I've known someone that's gotten shingles, it's usually surrounding some sort of very stressful time in their life. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty common explanation.
Yeah. So I want to jump to some of the things you're mentioning there, Ben, in just one moment. I just quickly wanted to mention a couple of things I brought up with Nora on the phone that we discussed. The first one was that I thought maybe she was being given some kind of topical ointment or cream alongside the hypnotherapy, or some kind of pill or medication alongside the other stuff. Mm-hmm. But she swears that she wasn't. She believes that her mom, she's spoken with her mom about this a ton. It was like a story they used to tell all the time about how the warts got cured. The mom doesn't think there was any other treatment, or can't recall, because this was 40 something years ago when this occurred. The other thing was that I thought perhaps the doctor had suggested some kind of diet change, or some kind of, you know, product change, you know, like a type of soap or some topical thing that's going on her hands all the time, changing pH levels, or changing somehow the chemistry of her skin and the oil, and the natural oils. That is also something they can't recall, or they don't believe occurred. At least to the family, to Nora and her mother, they believe that whatever the hypnosis sessions did, that's what caused it. And I want to jump to the thing you were talking about, Ben, because you can go to places like, I'm just going to give a URL, Jeff, J-E-F-F, Lazarus, L-A-Z-A-R-U-S-M-D.com, mm-hmm. and you can check out, you know, patient testimonials from Jeffrey E. Lazarus, MD, who offers medical hypnosis for things like warts. He says he can use medical hypnosis to permanently remove warts.
Okay. I was thinking, I also found some stuff from PubMed.
Yes.
Which, you know, is pretty legit, or tends to be so. It looked like they, it looks like one DM Ewan is reporting 41 consecutive cases of hypnotherapy used as a treatment for warts with 33 cures.
Yeah, and that's from 92. And then even in 88, yeah, in 88, there's a case report of a child with warts, and how there were 82 common warts on this 1 7-year-old female removed through hypnotic suggestion. And it says, this is what it says in the abstract. It states that hypnotic suggestions were given for the facial warts to disappear before the warts from the rest of the body. After 2 weeks, 8 of 16 facial warts were gone with no other changes.
Is the implication that they shriveled up, or that they like dropped off, or what?
I guess disappeared, worked
digested like, by the skin.
Exactly.
Perhaps. Okay. Interesting.
After 3 additional biweekly sessions, all 82 warts were gone.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah. But that's one report, right?
Right.
The other one talks about 41 consecutive cases. So like, that's pretty significant.
It also taught me a term I had never heard before. I'm getting increasingly on board with this. I'm not going to say I'm 100% certain of the efficacy in all cases yet, but just in this short span of time, I'm getting more and more pro-hypnotherapy for warts, or should I say pro-psychodermatology. I am so predictable. All I need is a cool sounding word. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's legit. Psychodermatology.
I love that. I think that's great. I wanted to ask you guys what you think. Like, is hypnosis and hypnotherapy, is it in the same realm as, say, something like Reiki, which is like, you know, meant to impart like a force upon the body? And I understand that the hypnosis is meant to hijack your brain and cause your brain to do the thing. But I know there's still a lot of like questions around whether it works or not. And I think maybe the jury is still out as to whether like science has completely embraced hypnosis, right? I just wondered what you guys thought, if there were any parallels there in your mind.
Yeah, that's a good question. So hypnosis has efficacy and it has credibility depending upon the application it's involved with. So I'd be very skeptical of any kind of hypnotic regression, even with the best of intentions on the part of the hypnotizer. But with this, it's interesting, Mayo Clinic proceedings for, you know, when they studied what's called hypnodermatology related to psychodermatology, they said that, quote, a review of the use of hypnosis in dermatology supports its value for many skin conditions not believed to be under conscious control. So ethics aside, then, the best way to test this would be to see if you could hypnotize someone who doesn't have warts into having warts.
Aha.
Oh, dastardly.
And at that point, it's almost more like witchcraft or something, you know? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, but maybe it explains witchcraft, right?
That's what I'm saying. Well, it's all the power of belief. That's my point, you know? I think it with enough belief within oneself that a given spell or incantation is possible and is in fact acting upon you, your brain could potentially have some sort of psychosomatic reaction.
Hmm.
Agreed. Mm. Yeah. I mean, this, I don't know if you thought we were going to go to this direction with you, Nora, but there is an Australian practice, or there was an Australian practice of pointing the bone at people. And you guys may have heard about this. If someone committed a great sin or broke a taboo, then they could be, in traditional Australian communities, subjected to a type of execution called kurdaicha. K-U-R-D-A-I-T-C-H-A.
That sounds intense just based on the consonant sounds alone.
Right. They're coming in with some hard consonants there. The idea is that through the power of the mind, a holy man, a holy person can charge this ritualistic bone and through pointing this at the victim, they will create a curse. And when someone is cursed by having this bone pointed at them by this execution method, which is what it's considered, they become listless, apathetic. They don't eat. They don't sleep. Their death often occurs within mere days of being cursed, which is interesting because it means dehydration and starvation alone cannot explain it. So it is possible then, and we'll get back, we're getting back to words, I promise, but it is absolutely possible then for someone's mind to be powerful enough to cease their bodily functions because they believed that they were legitimately cursed. So you could, if you can control your own ability to die in that regard, then warts can't be that hard, right?
It's like an auto shutdown button.
That's I can see it. And we've talked about the power of belief a lot on this show. So if you can convince, if a hypnotherapist could convince you that you don't have warts, would they go away?
Could it also convince you that you don't have bad breath and you could have fresh minty breath without having to actually brush your teeth?
I think they'd have to hypnotize the bacteria.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Well, hey, guys, this turned out to be a great conversation, just as I think we were all hoping it would. I was certainly hoping it would after hearing that initial message. I just want to say thanks to Nora for calling us, leaving that message, telling that story, and talking with us. And thank you to everybody else who we talked about today.
Yes, thanks to Steve for hipping us to this potential small child, medium child, that's trolling the White House press corps, but also asking some hard-hitting questions that we need to hear the answers to. Really quickly, guys, I just want to say, if Ben gets a drinking game for every time he says, can Matt get one for every time he says, wow?
That's not up to us. That's up to the other part of the show, the listeners. Let us know.
Wow, pointing the bone right at me.
There are too many bones on the dance floor right now, guys. We gotta point ourselves toward the end of the show. Thank you very much to Casper. Thank you to everyone on Here's Where It Gets Crazy, best part of a show, our fellow conspiracy realists. I so very much want to hear about the stuff you saw in your childhood that you later realized was sinister. Doc had an excellent example with Pepe Le Pew, but there are other examples out there. There's a really weird scene in a Mark Twain claymation thing where they talk to Satan. There are a lot of 1930s cartoons that look positively occult, arguably are.
Yeah, Pepe Le Pew is basically like a rapey Terminator. Really strange. And by the way, I say psychedelic a lot, so that can be my drinking game.
And let us know, either on that thread or just calling us, contacting us directly, what sinister things you saw in childhood, what your take on hypnosis is, and let us know the times that you have impersonated reporters. I feel like we've all been there. We try to be easy to find online. We've got Facebook, Twitter, all the good ones, all the hits, all the slow jazz. But if you don't like social media, you can also call us directly.
That's right. You can reach us at 1-833-STDWYTK. 3 minutes is the time, your time to shine. Leave us a message, tell us a story, ask us a question, anything that you think would be appropriate to include on one of our weekly listener mail episodes, the one you just finished listening to. If you don't want to be on one, maybe write us an email. You can certainly, you know, do the voicemail as well, but try to stick to the 3 minutes and just let us know what to call you. And please do let us know if you definitely don't want us to use it, because we like to use them because y'all are great.
Yes. And remember, youtube.com/conspiracy stuff. That is where you can find all of our videos that have ever occurred on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, including these conversations. Check it out now if you'd like. We'd love to see you over there. And please feel free to leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice, particularly on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to see more reviews on there if possible. If you got the time, I'll be like, wow. Yeah, thanks.
I know you will. I'll find it incredibly psychedelic.
And I'll make a deal with you folks. If the spirit so moves you and you write a review, if you put in something that makes me chuckle,
or is an inside joke, then you might just end up on the air. So we're incentivizing now.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. right.
Yes, indeed. And I think there's nothing wrong with a good incentive.
All right, guys, let's do this. We're gonna say the email in order, like consecutively in order, for our previous caller. You ready? I'll get started. You can always email us. We are conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
You can always email us 24/7, 365 days a year, at our good old-fashioned email address, where we are conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Do you want to give one last?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.